Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the Job Growth, Energy Affordability, Policy, and Finance Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, May 17th. The first order of business is approval of the minutes. Representative Anderson moves approval of the minutes dated March 28th. Are there any corrections, additions, or changes? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those say nay. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Members, we have one bill on the agenda for today. This is House File 739. Representative O'Neill's bill. Representative O'Neill moves that House File 739 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. And Representative O'Neill, you have a DE 7 amendment, which is what our research summary is written to and conforms to your intent. Is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
So Representative O'Neill will move the DE 7 amendment. It's my intention we'll adopt this amendment, and then Representative O'Neill can do her presentation, and we'll do public testimony based on that. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All say nay. Motion prevails. The DE 7 amendment is adopted. Members, in our packets, I only have one amendment with me. Are there other amendments that are going to be offered today? Representative Mahoney and Thiessen? Representative Thiessen?
The one you have will not be offered.
Okay, so A3 will not be offered. Representative Thiessen, what's the amendment you're offering? The A...
I have no idea what number it is, but it has to do with the ordinance exemption.
Okay, well, why don't we have staff pass out these amendments in that way? So we have, with the A3 being withdrawn, I see we have six amendments that are up here. So it looks like the A7 amendment, any ordinance or law. Okay, so let's take these amendments and pass them all out to the members right now so they have all of them, and then that way there's no other amendments besides these ones right here. Representative Mahoney?
I don't know if it's gotten through yet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have an amendment. I may be late on my 100 copies getting here. Last I heard, they were making them as I was walking down. So I'll see if it's gotten here.
So let's have all the amendments dispensed to the members, and we'll make sure that because we did waive the 24-hour rule, I want to make sure we have all the amendments the members wish to offer, and then we'll close the door on that. So while the amendments are being passed out, Representative O'Neill, if you wish to begin your presentation, it's the chair's intent to allow Representative O'Neill to present her bill. We'll hear from proponents for about 15 to 20 minutes. We'll also give opponents the same amount of time frame, 15 to 20 minutes. We'll take action on the amendments that members wish to submit, and then we'll be voting on this today. Is there any questions from members before we proceed? Good. Representative O'Neill, your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today is a very exciting day in Minnesota. We're talking about a new technology that will hopefully be rolling into Minnesota. So if we can get this bill done, we'll have an amazing cell phone technology that just a few states right now have, and that would be 5G cell phone service. So right now with 4G, the comparison between a 4G rollout, which is what many of us have now, and 5G, it's 100 times faster. So imagine being able to download a two-hour movie in 3 seconds. If we can deploy this in Minnesota, it would solve a lot of problems, including some of the rural broadband issues. It's an amazing technology. We'd really love to move it forward. What we've been doing for the past 2 weeks with this particular bill I've been at the table with the stakeholders and going through a very arduous stakeholder process, going word by word, line by line, paragraph by paragraph, and page by page. We went through this bill 5 times through and got as much agreement as humanly possible. And so the bill you have in front of us right now is what we have come to as an agreement, to the best that we can have an agreement with all the stakeholders. And it does go through a permitting process. It goes through some regulatory certainty that the cell providers need in order to choose Minnesota to roll out here. And it's very important because we also have something else coming to Minnesota, which is the Super Bowl is coming. And the cell providers would love to actually deploy this across Minnesota, starting with the Super Bowl. But if we cannot have regulatory certainty, I'm very fearful that what they'll do is roll in trucks with the technology and roll them right back out, and we won't have 5G technology here in Minnesota. So what you have before us is some regulatory certainty and some best practices that we can use with the cities and the local governments so that there is a 5G rollout here in Minnesota. And with that, for the specifics of more of the bill, I've got several testifiers, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you. And again, the chair's intent is to limit the proponents to 15 to 20 minutes, so the more you talk, the less other supporters can talk on the bill, and that will go to the same thing as the proponents. So How you choose to use the time is up to the person who's speaking. So welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Paul Wirtz. I'm the state president for AT&T Minnesota. I know we've had extensive discussions on this bill in previous committee hearings. It's probably one of the best kept, well, really not a secret about the negotiations that have gone on over the last several weeks. I want to commend Representative O'Neill for her diligent work in bringing the stakeholder parties together, really forcing all of us to, one, kind of treat each other nicely, politely, work line by line through the bill, and really coming to a solution. They say, you know, the best agreement is when all parties aren't in agreement. Everybody has to give a little bit. And certainly from the wireless perspective, we feel that's where we are. But we are interested in investing in Minnesota. We're interested in bringing 5G wireless, this latest technology. And make no mistake, we are kind of in an arms race with other states on the deployment, on the capital that's going to be needed to deploy this technology. If I may, I'd like to share a couple quotes with you. Representative O'Neill mentioned the number of states that have already passed this bill. Iowa just passed this. It was signed into law May 9th. And I quote, Iowans deserve the benefits of high-speed broadband and its positive impacts on the economy, schools, hospitals, and healthcare, said Ben Hames, Communications Director for Governor Terry Branstad. This new law will remove obstacles to broadband wireless investment, help bring better wireless service to consumers, and position Iowa for a prosperous economic future. The headline on April 5th, and this is in your packet, Arizona becomes first in nation to pave the way for 5G technology deployment statewide. This is from Governor Doug Ducey. I was proud to sign House Bill 2365 on March 31st. The legislation, by making it easier to add capacity to existing wireless networks and thus improve our infrastructure, will go a long way in solidifying our reputation as a state where new and exciting tech companies can set up shop and flourish. This is from my peer in Arizona on that announcement as well. Thanks to Governor Ducey signing legislation that encourages companies to invest more in wireless infrastructure, AT&T is accelerating its wireless build-out plans in Arizona with tens of millions of dollars dedicated to mobile network enhancements in the state. This investment will include next-generation upgrades that will pave the way to 5G mobile services. And finally, I'd like to add the comment from the Duluth News Tribune. Unfortunately, the scramble to fix the so-called small cell antennas or small cells is being hampered by outdated state and local regulations and requirements written for and put in place for the massive cell towers of yesterday. Because Minnesota must keep pace with technology if it wants to keep up with other states and the rest of the world in attracting business and encouraging economic progress, the legislature this session can take action to streamline and make consistent throughout the state rules, regulations, and requirements for small cells. That's really what we're up against. It's really our jobs as representative of the wireless company to try to do what we can to bring the capital, to bring this technology to Minnesota. And this process is about placement, it's about price, and it's about process. And we think with this bill, we have a solution that's going to work very nicely for the wireless communities, give the cities the local control that they need, certainly give them a revenue package that is among the most generous in the country, and really help that acceleration, that deployment. And with that, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Thank you. Would the next testifier please come forward? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Margaret Anderson Kelleher. I'm here in my capacity as President and CEO of the Minnesota High Tech Association. I want to share with you our thanks to Representative O'Neill for taking this issue on and working on this issue over the last number of weeks. The High Tech Association sees this issue as an important leap forward on technology. There are companies today who are starting to form their company and business around the use of this high-speed technology to transmit data, especially in the medical IT space. The medical device space are sort of new groundbreaking way that the medical device industry has leapt forward in Minnesota. So we see this as necessary, not just nice, to be able to keep making progress on our economic well-being in the state of Minnesota. Plus, it does provide some advantages to connect Minnesotans more quickly across the state in terms of what would be available today. Now, I know that there's been a lot of negotiation. I know there's not complete agreement on the bill, but I will say one of the most disturbing pieces that I've seen in the last few months is actually communities passing ordinances banning this technology. I kind of can't get my head around that, having sat in your seats and in policymaker seats, that we would actually ban technology in the state of Minnesota that could help Minnesotans build their business or get connected faster. And so I think that is one of the more disturbing trends about this situation right now. So I really welcome that you're taking it on this late in session to advance it forward for possible further consideration. We know that this provides a structure on these important issues that have been under debate today, and it really, I think, is a way to help advance things forward. These emerging technologies are important to Minnesotans. They will provide economic return. And I do know that Representative O'Neill is right about these big events that are coming. The way that if we don't have this sort of framework in place, trucks roll in, trucks roll out. Minnesotans don't get the day-to-day benefit of 5G for going forward, and there is a big benefit to this. So we hope that from a technology standpoint, we can work with the author of the bill and all of you to make sure that we can advance this forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Would the next testifier please come forward? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Michael McDermott. I'm Executive Director of State Government Affairs for Verizon. I also want to echo the terrific work of Representative O'Neill. We wouldn't be here today at this hearing, nor would we be here today with this product to consider this legislation if it wasn't for her leadership and hard work. I think we've calculated over 40 hours of meetings face-to-face, so thank you from the bottom of our heart for her hard work on this. I'd like to open up with a question, if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman. What do the cities of Des Moines and Ottumwa, Iowa, Phoenix and Tempe, Arizona, Denver and Fort Collins, Colorado, Cincinnati, Columbus and Cleveland, Ohio, Topeka, Kansas, Roanoke, Richmond, and Blacksburg, Virginia have in common?
They've all won pro sports championships more recently than the state of Minnesota. That was a rhetorical question. All right.
Mr. Chairman, I could probably add about 20 more cities to that list.
Oh, whoa, hey, hold on.
Minnesota? I didn't say anything in Minnesota.
Well, hold on. Minnesotans can make fun of our lack of pro sports accomplishments. Sir, are you from Minnesota?
No, sir, I'm from Chicago.
Chicago? Is it Chicago? Will the next testifier please come right out?
Would it make you feel better, Mr. Chairman, if I recognized we did get swept 4-0?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we noticed that. Congratulations on that.
And the White Sox are second.
All right, back to the testimony.
I digress, sir. I apologize. What they have in common, these cities, are that they're going to have 5G technology before any city in Minnesota without this legislation. I work in an industry that is prepared to spend, according to a censure, over $2 billion in Minnesota over the next 5 years to bring this transformative technology. Verizon is currently working in 11 cities to do a trial of 5G today. It's a commercial trial in which we're fine-tuning the way we're going to deploy our 5G networks. And we've been transparent from the beginning about what our intents were with this bill, how we needed to have this path of regulatory clarity that Representative O'Neill had addressed in her testimony. And I know some of the opponents will get up here and say, well, the wireless providers have paid X amount of dollars for 4G small cells throughout their cities, and that should be the baseline. But I would say, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, that what these cities have done is to monetize our sense of urgency, to monetize our sense of need to keep our 4G networks from collapsing. We know that 5G is wanted by your consumers, by your residents, because they're slamming us on 4G today. And so because of that extra high, extraordinary demand for 4G technology, we have to put small cells where there's heavy data usage. and the cities have been very successful in monetizing that sense of urgency. But 5G is a lot different. We're going to need small cells, small nodes, all over the state of Minnesota in order to build and maintain the most efficient network that we have. And if anyone has Verizon, we pride ourselves on the excellent network that we've built and maintained. We want to transform our network into 5G to be able to do that. But we have to hit the reset button. Instead of the macro towers that allow us to cover multiple miles of technology, we have to go low and tight with the small cells for 5G. And that's why we're here today seeking this path of regulatory clarity to make this $2 billion industry investment with no federal subsidies, no state subsidies, no local subsidies, to bring transformative fixed wireless network capacity to all residents where we build this network out, not especially in those areas where there's high data demand. So with that, I'd like to conclude my comments by saying that there is one, we found one error in the drafting of the bill with regards to the provision of electrical service to the small cells, and we will be bringing forth in a few days language that would correct that. And with that, Mr. Chair, thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative O'Neill, do you have any other proponents you wish to have testify at this time?
I don't see anyone else.
Okay. Representative Mahoney, did you have a quick question?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and whether they come back individually or show up in my office so that they can assure me, what I'm very worried about, when particularly the gentleman who just spoke, the high data use areas. That's obviously the Twin Cities, Duluth, Mankato, Rochester, any place there's a college. But what about the small towns like Jackson or Elder Lake or you know, Tamarack up on the range? What I'm very, very worried about is in 2 or 3 years we're going to have another broadband issue in front of us where cities and towns come to us and say we need to have state subsidies to get companies to come into our small area of 200 users or 500 users, and I need some assurances from the companies, the big providers, that you're not going to cherry pick. I need to understand that for a state future state dollars that we're going to have to spend.
And that's Representative Mahoney, if we could, the testifier can come back. I want to make sure we get through all the public testimony before we move to member questions. So Representative Mahoney will follow up with the testifier at that point. So Representative O'Neill, no other proponents of the bill? Is there any proponents of the bill wish to speak in favor of it at this time? I'll say none. We'll move on to opponents of the bill. Same time frame, 15 to 20 minutes. We'll start off with Ms. Dewar from the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association. Actually, I shouldn't say it. I don't know that you're an opponent, but I just, sorry. So, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Amanda Dewar, and I'm representing the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association. First, I want to thank Representative O'Neill for the numerous hours she spent mediating the stakeholder discussion. I think her description as arduous was accurate. So as presented in the DE amendment before you, DE7, MMUA is neutral on this bill as it exempts municipal electric utility structures from the bill. Through the process, it was recognized that there can be operational issues with utility poles and some of the decorative streetlights, so we appreciate that the providers were willing to offer to exclude municipal electric utilities from this bill, and that's something that's been done in several other states that have passed similar legislation. So with this exemption in the bill, wireless providers could continue to negotiate for the siting of small cell wireless antennas with municipal utilities as they can under current law. And just one more point, other electric utilities, your investor-owned utilities or co-ops, would not be subject to the processes laid out in this bill, so it does make sense to also exclude municipal electrics. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there opponents of the bill who wish to testify at this time? And if you could, if you want to, just come down and you can start sitting there so we... Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Anna Boroff. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Cable Communications Association. We, too, would like to thank Representative O'Neill for many, many hours spent facilitating discussion on this bill with respect to legislation that would create a streamlined process for small wireless facilities to access the public right-of-way in Minnesota. As you know, we've had serious concerns about this legislation sort of from the beginning, and we greatly appreciate her and all of your willingness to hear out our concerns. We've had an opportunity to review the most current draft of the House bill language, and as the language stands today, we no longer oppose its passage, and we are neutral on the bill for the 2017 legislative session.
Opponents of the bill who wish to come forward at this time? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Maybe I should say those who are neutral and who are opposed to the bill. Those who do not support the bill. Maybe it's a better way. So welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Laura Ziegler with the League of Minnesota Cities, statewide organization representing over 830 cities. I apologize. My voice is a little hoarse. I promise it's not because of any yelling in the negotiations. So I apologize if I'm in and out here a little bit. But this is not my first time in front of you discussing this issue. And the last time I was in front of you, the League committed to Representative Hoppe and to you that we would continue working to get to an agreement. And as you've heard, those talks have continued, and we've tried to get towards that and tried to make that language as workable as possible. Myself, like others, would like to thank Representative O'Neill for her time. We're all very well-versed in Chapter 237, our telecommunications law, at this point. So we had our members evaluate the delete all that was posted yesterday, and it became apparent that a number of the provisions were not acceptable to them, and so we are still opposed to the DE7. Although we have serious concerns, and this issue has really ignited a lot of passion from our members, as I talked to you earlier, just with this being a core function of cities, with managing the right-of-way and doing it in a really thoughtful way as technology continues to evolve and emerge, and there are multiple actors in the right-of-way. I do want to recognize that the language is an improvement from what we saw at the beginning, so I want to be on the record with that. I think there's also been some misconceptions maybe that have transpired on city's position with small cells in general, so I hope I can clarify that for some of you today. I also have a public works director here. I think their perspective is really important since they're doing this day in and day out and have that technical expertise. And so he will talk to you about how cities negotiate with utilities and use it in the right of way. While I am going to go through in more specificity our remaining concerns. We were able to compromise on a number of issues that we feel we can have our members agree to, which is allowing small cells as a permitted use in the right-of-way. So that means that they're explicitly allowed, as well as a time frame in which cities have to respond to these permits and applications, and also allowing some consolidation for those providers when they're applying. We have long maintained that contracts with the wireless providers should be negotiated at the local level, as the right-of-way is that valuable limited resource I've been talking about, and they can best manage it. And so one of the biggest issues of the bill is really that it creates special rights and a special permitting system for one technology and one industry without considering other users of the right-of-way. So that's sort of the overarching issue, and so that's where a lot of these concerns stem from. So if you wanted to follow along with the DE, I can direct you to some of the specific line items that remain outstanding, and I will provide this to Representative O'Neill as well. So we'll move all the way to page 7.1. and this received quite a bit of conversation when we were in negotiations, but so a local unit of government could not require a provider of non-wireless. We have to require the same information of wireless providers as we would for non-wireless, which isn't always going to be the case. We might need additional information or different information from a wireless provider than a non-wireless provider. And so we're going to be put at odds if we're discriminatory in that regard. And we feel that that could open us up to litigation, but we also want to make sure that we have all the information available to us to make a good decision. Another new addition, this was from cable, and I haven't talked to them extensively about this, but there's an addition on page 8.1 that allows these even smaller facilities to be strung in between cables. And so that's something that cities just need to evaluate a little bit more, and if there's not a permit that they have to apply for to string these up between cables, we just want to make sure that that's done in a thoughtful and safe way. I would say one of the biggest issues is just halfway down the page on line 8.20, and that is the language that a small wireless facility co-location agreement has to be written in a substantially complete way so that a wireless service provider can accept it with little substantive negotiation. And this is where it goes back to be able to negotiate at the local level that's substantially complete and what that means, and not having the ability to negotiate because of that standard agreement. So that is, communities are going to have different needs with regard to this. So that's something we brought up at the negotiations. So I would anticipate we'd talk a little bit more about that. And really just two more issues. One, there's some references to third-party contractors in this, and we're limiting the use of them by cities. But then later on in the bill, so page 14, line 29, and it's again on 15.1, so a telecommunications right-of-way user can use another entity or individual to act on its behalf to install, construct, maintain, or repair their facilities. But then on the flip side, there's restrictions on what cities can do. So it doesn't seem quite fair that they can use their third-party contractors, but then we are further squeezed and limited in how we can utilize external expertise. And it really just ties the hands of cities. You know, if they don't have the staff to be able to evaluate this and negotiate, we feel that we should have the same rights that are given to the providers. And finally, as I'm sure you've heard a lot of the issue of money, and with respect to an annual fee that is charged to the wireless provider, our offer last week was that we didn't want fixed costs in the bill because they can be variable. They're not going to be the same. So we had a flat lease fee of $200 per month plus actual costs that would include administrative costs, operation, including electricity and maintenance. And that offer was rejected. And then after that, the decision was not ours to negotiate. So the result is what you see in the bill with respect to those electricity costs and the $125 per year with the $25 maintenance. I have gotten a lot of feedback, especially on that maintenance fee of $25, that would not necessarily be sufficient for cities to cover that per year. So that would be something that we would respectfully request not be a fixed cost, but rather just what the actual cost is, and the city would have to provide that information, you know, as evidence to the provider. I think a couple other testifiers might speak to the need for an inflator, as well as a lot of these are long-term contracts, and to lock in a price can be quite difficult. And we've heard that the industry does not want to be subsidized, and so we want to ensure that doesn't happen either. So those are our specific issues. Thank you very much for your time today. We really do believe that there is a way that, you know, we can get at best practices and guidelines with cities without just chipping away at local flexibility and the control to have these in the right of way. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Ziegler. Are there any other members of the public who wish to testify on this bill? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Steve Albrecht. I'm the Public Works Director for the City of Burnsville. I'm also a director with the American Public Works Association and representing the cities of the Public Works Association of Minnesota. I'll be real brief. Number one, I'd like to thank our partners in the wireless industry. They've come a long way, and we've been working on this, and we continue to work. But I think we need to recognize that we all are supportive of bringing this technology forward. But the devil is in the details of when we roll this out to make sure that it doesn't have impacts on our constituents, and that's what I'm going to talk about real briefly. As written, there are some issues with the legislation. Number one, it does provide preferential treatment. Electricity is important, gas is important, and our other utilities are important also. They do not have this type of preferential treatment if we deliver. We work with those partners. We work with the telecommunications industry to make sure we provide those. We have never denied this type of permit in the city of Burnsville since I've been there. We work with our partners to come up with practical solutions within our ordinance. Fair cost. The capping and the type of cost restraint in the legislation as written will shift costs to your constituents. Right-of-way has to be purchased. Right-of-way has to be managed. Those costs aren't free. And so the way the current legislature statute is written is that we spread those costs out equally to all the partners. And this one caps one partner's cost at a much smaller amount than the rest of the partners, which include the city and the other utilities as far as fees. And so it doesn't draw the rational nexus that was part of the original legislation. Adequate protection for your constituents. As written, there still seems to be a failure to understand that residential zoning does not include the right-of-way. Most cities, the right-of-way is standalone. So in front of a residential house, the zoning does not prohibit placement of these towers as written. It references areas zoned residential. In front of your house, the right-of-way is right-of-way. It is covered under a right-of-way ordinance. And so as written, there still could be towers placed in front of residential properties that met the size and height criteria, and cities could not prohibit that because of the way that the law is written right now. So there are details that we need to work out that will have impacts on our constituents if we move forward without working those details out, and that's very important. Not that we shouldn't have the towers, but we want to make sure they're in the right places and that they're not in places that they were unintended. And last but not least, the legislation exempts them from maintenance to get permits. Now, every utility gets permits when they do maintenance. When you have utilities in a right-of-way, you typically have to shut lanes down. You have to impact traffic. To not have a permit process where you have an approved traffic plan and a safety plan, it seems a little bit premature to me. I don't know why we would allow that for one utility and not for the other. We work together. Emergencies, we understand that they have to make quick repairs. But when there's planned repairs, they should have to follow the same permit process for repairs and replacement. And so with that, I would thank you for your time and appreciate your consideration.
Thank you very much. Are there any other members of the public who wish to testify on this bill? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Stephen Huser. I represent Metro Cities. Metro Cities respectfully but strongly opposes the DE7 amendment to HF 739. While progress has been made by stakeholders on provisions in this bill, the proposed delete all amendment fails to address key concerns that have been raised by city representatives. The proposed caps to the annual maintenance fee at $25 per year and annual lease at $125 per year are problematic for local units of government. Fixing such costs in statute has the high potential to create a situation where taxpayers end up paying for unanticipated expenses from companies using public assets. A capping of annual maintenance costs could also result in local units of government and their taxpayers subsidizing the wireless industry. Current law allows wireless companies to work with cities to provide for the installation of this technology today. Contracts are best negotiated at a local level, as the right-of-way is a limited public resource. Local officials are responsible for ensuring the rights of way are managed to protect the safety and financial interests of all the residents of the community and are in a position to best determine the management of the resource. Metro City's policies generally oppose statutory restrictions that impede the ability of local officials to act and protect the best interests of the community. This amendment gives special rights, access, and permitting to one private industry. It is the position of Metro Cities that a precedent-setting change of this kind deserves further deliberation. Under this premise, Metro Cities respectfully opposes the DE7 amendment to HF 739. Thanks.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any additional public testifiers? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion. Move to member questions. Representative Mahoney, I believe you had the first question. If you want to restate that question for which testifier and...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly can restate it. My problem is that as they were testifying to you, I came up with so many other questions. And Mr. Chair, I would like to find out what some of these contracts have already... They allude to the fact that contracts have already been let in multiple different cities. It would be nice to understand what the yearly cost for one of these one of these small cells has been negotiated, so long as it's public information, or any contract with the city that's already been signed should be. For my concern for the providers at this particular point in time is these are typically in high data area use. So Minneapolis, St. Paul, Bloomington, up in Duluth on the riverfront, around a college campus. But what about, the area where I live, which is a nice little residential street with 20 houses on it, you folks my age that haven't figured out what data use is yet, versus the couple of kids that could probably wipe out the limit. So if the providers could come down and tell me what your plan is for these low data area users, not so much where I live, but in the cities that I had aforementioned, Tamarack up on the range, Jackson down in southwestern Minnesota, Harmony down in southeast.
Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney. I think part of this is kind of our investment track record. I don't have this in your folders, but this is kind of our coverage map of Minnesota, 4G LTE. I mean, we actually have a legally vetted statement that we provide more coverage than any other carrier in Minnesota. We just got to Worthington last year. We had over 1,200 investment upgrades in communities, over 270 communities in Minnesota last year. We're going to be doing some CapEx announcements in the next couple of weeks about what we've done over the last 3 years. I think it's part of, the small cells are part of the equation. 5G is the long-term, it's going to be the revolutionary technology. Small cells are part of that. We're actively testing right now fixed wireless internet service, which would be another broadband solution that could provide. We actually have a national trial going on with respect to that. We're actually doing some rural broadband deployment right over the river from St. Croix in Wisconsin, where people are getting their internet wirelessly. In a rural, smaller town where there isn't that data congestion that we would see in St. Paul or Minneapolis, it could be one or two of these antennas, and then the capacity helps those people in those lower densely populated areas. But the technology, it isn't like it's not theoretical. We did an announcement last year on what we call Project Airgate. It is broadband along power lines. There are over 200 patents associated with that technology. We had to announce it because there's so many leaks from the patent office about what's AT&T up to here with all these patents. And it's being actively tested. And I think that fits into the narrative of, let's get this process right in Minnesota for small cell, so then the doors can get blown open for how we would bring those other technologies, because we're going to be competing with other states, and as my colleague from Verizon said, with other cities for that deployment. I hope that answers your question.
Representative Mahoney, do you have a follow-up?
I'll wait for the other testifier.
Welcome to the committee. Please restate your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Mike McDermott, Executive Director of Government Affairs for Verizon. I think there's an important, your question is extremely valid, probably one of the most asked questions about our 5G plan and our current 4G network management. The reality is that we need fiber to provide both 4G capacity relief and ultimately for Paul, as Paul said, the long play 5G. Without fiber, we can't bring it. So I actually think that this technology will be the carrot for the rural local exchange providers to make that investment that right now they wouldn't get a return on investment if they were to do. I think it's the incentive for them to make the investment to bring the fiber to these communities, and then they would have four or five wireless providers as their first customers, providing the backhaul for our broadband network. So I think that your question is valid, but it requires us to have the connectivity to bring this technology.
Representative Mahoney?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to both testifiers. Sometimes I feel like I've been around here way too long. And every statement that's made at this witness table leaves holes in it large enough for a tractor trailer to drive through, and I think you just did. I hope, whether I'm here or I'm not here, whether it's 2 years or 10 years down the road, that if communities come back, if you come back and say we need state assistance in order to drive this to wherever it needs to get to, we pass a law that requires you to actually put it in there on your own dime. The chair of this committee and a past chair of this committee has had fight after fight after fight about broadband, statewide broadband. And frankly, not only am I just sick and tired of it, but I think the taxpayers are a little frustrated at having to spend that kind of dollars, although I don't think the taxpayers are that upset at spending the dollars. They just seem that it's a never-ending thing. So you have left a few openings. I've heard it. I'm sure other members on this committee have heard it. Don't come back and say we need a subsidy to make sure 5G works everywhere in the state and we're going to provide it to Tamarack, a city of 60 people, or 160 people, unless the state brings money to the table. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Metza, Scott, and then we'll take up amendments. Representative Metza?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess a couple of my questions have been asked there, and I'd be curious to hear from our cable providers, is this a big enough carrot?
Mr. Chair, may I?
Well, you're not a cable provider.
No, but may I frame this just a little bit, if I may, sir?
Well, Representative Metza asked a question of a specific group of people, and you're not in that group of people. I'm sorry, but if Representative Metza wants to ask you a question, he certainly is welcome to, but does the Cable Association want to come down and answer the question? Please restate your name for the record.
Anna Boroff with the Cable Communications Association. And then could you ask the question again?
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Yeah, so they described this as being a carrot to your providers to actually run fiber out to many of these communities. I know, for example, Virginia, the community I'm in, has fiber going through it in some way, shape, or form. And we're working with our other partners with our broadband initiative in the state. Is this a big enough carrot that they're offering here with the 5G customer base, essentially, is what I heard the testifiers speaking to. Are the cellular providers a large enough customer base to incentivize our companies like that you're representing to actually bring fiber to these communities where you might not otherwise, because of the current customer base just not being large enough, hence the need for our broadband programs around the state, which I know Representative Lehman's been very passionate about seeing in her community, and I know we're on the same page on these types of issues and getting rural broadband and connectivity in our greater Minnesota communities. And so I'm very, very curious as to whether this would be, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back to get your companies to invest more in our communities.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I can't speak for the wireless companies in terms of what's going to be a big enough carrot for them or not. I can only speak to my member companies who have fiber in many of the communities that you're talking about. You know, I represent Charter, Comcast, Mediacom, and many of the smaller providers in rural Minnesota who right now do run fiber to a lot of those communities. Some of my members do receive and have applied for state broadband grants. Some don't apply for them. Some do. So it's a very short answer to probably a broader question about, you know, what's a big enough carrot and what's not. But I hope that helps.
Oh, well, follow up, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Will these new customers, like essentially what I heard them testify to is saying, if we are providing this service, it's going to be a carrot for you to want to run fiber to places that you're currently not. So I guess more what I'm asking is, are we going to get more deployment of fiber scale broadband, which is significantly faster over longer distances, especially in a rural area, if we pass a bill like this that limits what I'm hearing from our cities, their ability to negotiate rates, it potentially right now, and I'm not saying that this is a bad bill by any means in terms of the goal and outcome of getting a 5G system out there, but if it's not a carrot to your providers to get that out there, I think it needs to be pretty clear, because your testimony before was that you were neutral on the bill, mm-hmm. which I'm fine with either way, but I want to know, are you going to run more fiber, and is it a carrot that you need, or are there other things that we could put in the bill before final passage on the floor that would make it a carrot? And if so, it'd be, and you don't have to know that right now, you could get back to the committee and I on it, but it'd be good to know that so we could actually get it in the shape that it needs to be, so that that carrot is there, so we do maximize the private investment.
And Mr. Chair, Representative, maybe that's a question too for the wireless companies in terms of who owns that fiber that runs the backhaul to those facilities. Maybe they could expand more on what that technology looks like and who owns that and how they plan on expanding that.
Sounds like a perfect follow-up item to email members. So, thank you. Representative Scott, then Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if Ms. Ziegler could come down and Mr. Huser?
He's still in the room? No, the guy from the, yeah, from Metro Cities.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative O'Neill, for those of you that don't know, has a, I think she went to college and has her degree in marriage and family therapy. And so I'm going to use that analogy for this particular conversation because she has made that analogy with the different stakeholders represented in this conversation. And so last week, or maybe it was earlier this week, Representative O'Neill, the counselor, thought that the marriage had been saved, that compromise had been reached, and so we went ahead and we scheduled this hearing thinking, you know, there was peace in the valley. And then we, members today, got notification from the Metro Cities and from the League of Minnesota Cities that indeed was not their perception or that the marriage was still on the brink of not coming back together. And one of the things, and I think Representative O'Neill could testify to this, is that sometimes one of the parties in marriage therapy doesn't want to participate. But one of the best ways to get them to participate is for the other person to just keep on coming to get the therapy and keep on trying to move forward with their lives. And so my question to you is, are you going to be the marriage partner that walks away, or are you going to try to save the marriage?
For the testifiers.
Mr. Chair and Representative Scott, and I think everyone would attest, we have continued to be at the table in discussions, and we obviously have a very diverse membership with a lot of different stakeholders, and so we need to take those all into consideration, and this is a very technical area of law. There's a reason there's about five attorneys that specialize in it in the state of Minnesota, And so we have to do our due diligence in not only providing updates, but also receiving feedback as legislation evolves and changes. And so I would anticipate, as is the culture of my organization, to continue the conversation. And so, yes, the answer is yes.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So someone, I think it was one of these test cards, the question won't be for you, said that the pricing structure on page 13 was discussed a week ago, and then this language showed up. So where did it come from?
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Representative Thiessen and Mr. Chair. So as of Friday last week, we had, as far as I understood it, we went through this bill five times, line by line, page by page, on and on. And so at the end of Friday, we had agreed to everything with the exception of some of these fees. And the league had offered $200, and you see $125 here. And they had some additional parameters. They wanted to be paid for maintenance. They wanted to be paid for administrative costs, and they wanted to be paid for electricity, which actually the electrical cost was dealt with earlier in the bill, so there was no problem there. That was their last offer, and we needed to get moving forward. And so we didn't have any more time to do a counteroffer and a counteroffer. And actually, in fairness to Laura, I know that the speaker was in the room as well with myself, and we asked her, did she have the authority to counteroffer, which is how you normally do negotiations. They would offer, we would counteroffer, they would counteroffer. And she indicated that she was not able to do an offer anything other than the one on the paper that said 200 plus these three things that were quite variable. And I asked her for if you could substantiate those costs and sort of quantify those costs, because the whole point of doing the bill is to making sure that there's regulatory certainty, and that includes pricing certainty. And I would point out that if you look at the bills that have passed in the United States already, there is both regulatory certainty and a price certainty, and the price certainty is equally as important. And the highest amount passed right now in the United States is $200 or the lesser of actual expenses in this particular category that you're looking at. Now, we would be the second highest at the counteroffer. We would be quite a bit above the highest at the offer that the league gave, which just we could not accept that offer collectively because we wouldn't have 5G in Minnesota. It just, it wasn't something that they could afford. With that, when I went around the table and I said, Verizon, what's your number? Well, that was $50, not $200, flat, no other additional fees except for electricity. I said, Sprint, what was your number? Theirs was $75. And then AT&T, they were the highest. They were willing to go to $150, flat, now with all these additional fees. So this is a the best offer that could be agreed upon. The league didn't have the authority to come back and do a counteroffer. We ran out of time, to be honest. So that's what's in the bill. We had to have something substantive in the bill. So what you see is what was the best offer that the cell providers could live with and still deploy in Minnesota. And that being said, not all the cell providers are happy with this number at all. They feel that this is outside of what they're able to do. But in order to move this legislation forward, they were willing to accept that begrudgingly. And like I said, this bill truly is a true compromise. There is nobody that is thrilled and happy about this bill. Neither side is shouting to the hilltops that this is the great thing. And I believe this is a true compromise. The league isn't completely happy with everything, and the providers are not completely happy with everything. I think the only people that might be the happiest might be the cable companies in the room. Which is a little bit of irony if you've gone through all the negotiations with us. Anyway, so that's where that came from. And that's basically the ceiling of where the providers could be for us to have 5G in Minnesota. And that's what those numbers are from. They need regulatory certainty.
Thank you. So it was negotiated with the speaker and the providers, basically, came up with this agreement.
Representative O'Neill. That's not what I heard, but that's okay. That's Representative Thiessen, you saw the floor.
No, that's exactly what she said.
Representative O'Neill, do you wish to respond to that?
Sure. Mr. Chair and Representative Thiessen, let me clarify again that we had an offer from the league.
I understand that. The final, Mr. Chair, the final numbers they were not, the league was not involved in it. It was the providers sitting around in a room saying what they could do, you and the speaker, and you settled on these numbers.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Houston, it was, we took the components of the lease offer and put numbers to them so that we could have certainty. But we provided everything that we possibly could in line with what the league was asking for, and they were not able to, and I asked them if they could do a counteroffer. Laura said she could not because she didn't have the authority to do that.
Representative Houston.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I do find a little interesting that some of the, oh, Mr. Chair. Sorry, or not, I don't know. One interesting note on the fact that we couldn't get 5G, and I'm an author on the bill, I would like this to pass, but one interesting point is that they have negotiated deals at higher prices in the state of Minnesota. And so the argument that you can't actually get people deployed here in the state of Minnesota, like the city of Minneapolis, as an example, has higher fixed fees. Now, their energy costs, actually, what they charge for energy, actually means that they are getting paid less under this bill. But their fixed costs are higher. So the argument that they couldn't pay, that the corporations couldn't pay more, falls a little bit flat for me.
Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Houston. So let me just explain something else about the difference between 4G and 5G. So what you're talking about is accurate. That is for the 4G deployment.
5G in Minneapolis.
They don't have 5G in Minneapolis.
Hold on.
Sorry.
Just to be clear, you guys are going back with Representative O'Neill, make your statement, and then Representative Houston, you can correct her on what you're talking about. So,
Mr. Chair, thank you. There is no 5G deployment in Minnesota. What we're talking about is 4G deployment. And the difference between 4G and 5G deployment in Minnesota is that it takes a minimum of 10 times as many deployments to do 5G as it does 4G. So while the number might have been $750 or something like that for Minneapolis, for 4G, if you extrapolate that out and what the city of Minneapolis would actually get for 5G, if they got $150 per site, that's $1,500 if you're talking about apples to apples. So you're talking about 10 times as many deployments for 5G.
I think Representative Thiessen will go to you, but I think there's an agreement. I think 5G has not been deployed yet, but there's an agreement with a provider in Minneapolis, I think is what your point would represent.
Right. It has not been deployed, but there is, Minneapolis has an ordinance that they've already passed and reached agreement with the providers that actually, for 5G, that actually has higher fixed costs than are listed in this bill.
Right. And Representative O'Neill, to your point, what you're saying is these are small-scale pieces of infrastructure instead of big pieces. There are far more deployments in the area. So I think you guys are right. Saying different things. But Mr. Woods, did you wish to ask anything before
Mr. Chairman, I guess I can kind of clarify, because we're actively pursuing permits in Minneapolis, in St. Louis Park. We're trying to build for the Super Bowl. And this is not for 5G. This is to get these antennas to get the congestion relief that we're going to need for this event. Yes, this does help pave the way for 5G, but we've submitted our first batch of permits for Minneapolis, St. Louis Park. I think we've gone on record as we have filed a letter with the city of Bloomington that we are not using their right-of-way as a solution there because their costs are just outrageous, and they had no justification for that. So we're probably going to be seeking kind of one-day or one-event type situation there, not for the long-term benefit of Bloomington. St. Paul, we're still trying to talk to the guy in New York that I mentioned several weeks ago, back and forth with pricing thing. And that may end up in those are called master licensing agreements. You know, we have about 25 sites for St. Paul for coverage for the Super Bowl, whether it's permanent or we might have to go to these things called PALs, sell on wheels, for that event.
Representative O'Neill, you are a saint for dealing with this. Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There was something in there. I don't know. I'm trying to understand this whole process. But one of the things that I heard, and I just need some clarity on those who are opposing this right now, is that I heard a couple of things, that there's one company or entity that benefits from this bill. Who is that entity or company that's benefiting from this bill?
Mr. Works.
Mr. Chair, Representative, certainly the companies are going to gain some benefit in the certainty of price, the placement, and the process. So we have a roadmap where we can deploy, where the local governments still have to, they can approve or deny the permits. So that's still very much part of this process. We do get some certainty in this, and as compared to other states, it makes the justification for investing here in Minnesota that much easier.
Mr. Chair, who is we?
Mr. Works.
Oh, well, when I'm talking, Mr. Chair, Representative, so the providers are the wireless carriers, AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, T-Mobile. You know, the 5G world is becoming so competitive, even our cable colleagues are going to be using 5G technology. Ultimately, the customers, your citizens, are the direct beneficiaries of this technology.
Thank you. And so my last question would be, I also heard that Belize has special rights that no one else has as far as the right-of-ways and things like that. Could you talk a little bit more about why you deserve the special rights that no one else has?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I guess I would not agree with that statement. I think when you look at what we're trying to deploy, this technology wasn't around a couple of years ago. It's not a recognized technology in the right-of-way. We're trying to be, you know, the right-of-way laws need to be updated. This bill helps do that so that we can be recognized as a technology in the right-of-way. We're still going to City Hall to get permits for this technology, these antennas. We're going to pay the cities. So, and many times we're paying a lot more than, particularly in this bill, than we are going to pay in other cities and other states. So we're not, I would not agree with the statement that we're getting preferential treatment.
Mr. Chair, can I have the testifier who made that comment to also come and help me better understand that statement?
Welcome back to the committee. Please restate your name.
Steve Albrecht, City of Burnsville, APWA. This bill will create a separate right-of-way ordinance for small cell wireless that will be different from the other utilities, gas, electric, and those who follow other ordinances. It also, as I stated, allows for placement of facilities in other areas where the city cannot prohibit them based on certain things. We can prohibit based on safety, health, and welfare. We cannot prohibit something in a residential district as written because of the way the language is written, it's incorrect. Also, for permitting, they have a streamlined permitting process as far as maintenance and those types of things. They don't have to, they can notify the city, they don't have to get a permit to close a roadway down to work on their facilities, whereas other providers would have to work with us to make sure we don't jeopardize safety. So there is a separate set of rules clearly laid out here for this industry. And that's why we would prefer to have one ordinance that treats all of them equal and work towards things that work for all of the utilities. That would be APWA and the city's preference.
Representative Moran?
Just one last question, just to better understand. This is it. So I'm going to use the mayor's analogy that I heard earlier, you know, that whole marriage therapy piece where in a marriage you have to compromise and work together and, you know, or not leave the table. And so for the small carriers, wireless carriers, why do you not think that you need to be coordinating your efforts with the cities that you want to go into? Whether it's closing a roadway or setting up a pole in front of my house or what that, you know, why is it you feel that that is not necessary?
Mr. Works.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we do coordinate with the cities. Whether we have this bill or not, we are providers in the state of Minnesota. Whether it's somebody that has an AT&T business card or one of our authorized vendors, we are constantly talking to cities all the time about our plans for deployment. What we're trying to do is just define the parameters, because we want to deploy this technology as fast as possible, but with certain conditions that, you know, have the safeguards of the city, so that we can get that technology to their residents. Those are ongoing discussions. The cities have the right. We submit permits, and I mean that's part of this bill process. Is there isn't just a blanket, you know, here's our notification, we're coming in. We have to submit permits. Those are either approved or denied based on the conditions set forth in the bill.
Representative Makewade.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a few questions, and I think it's actually for both of the testifiers there. So I'm a millennial. I'm like a millennial in all sense of the word, including the avocado toast I had this morning. And so I love 5G. I want it. I will be using it. But I want to get to yes in terms of the cities, right, because they kind of control everything we do. So two of my most engaged constituents, my parents, live right in front of a right-of-way. And so I want to get a very clear understanding. Is it possible that these small cell wireless could go in front of a house or that lives right by a right-of-way, but it's zoned as a right-of-way and not a residential, like for our own home? Is that possible? Could that pop up in my neighborhood?
Mr. Wirtz.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think if we, you know, first of all, kind of walking through the process, we would submit our plans to the city, and there is that back and forth, and it would be deemed approved or disallowed. I think we have in the bill that historical districts are removed from that. You know, there are height restrictions on these. We can't just, you know, uniformly put up a 150-foot tower. These are antennas that would be put on structures that have to be able to sustain that. So, and in many cases, the small cell technology is changing so fast with the elements of it. Many times, they don't even look like, they look like trees, or they're encased. So it doesn't look like the modern day cell tower that you might be thinking of, and it would be very unobtrusive in that residential area. But again, you know, that would be driven by if we think we have a spectrum congestion issue in a residential area, we have to submit those permits to the city to be approved or denied, and it's always that dialogue that goes back and forth with the city.
So, Mr. Wirtz, a 5G antenna as it exists right now, how big are they?
I mean, you know, kind of, you know, something like this. I mean, 28 cubic with the, you know.
Fair to say it's smaller than a refrigerator?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's a pretty small piece of equipment.
The bill includes height restrictions. Yes. We agree with the city. There should be height restrictions. There's been a company, I won't name them, that was going around the cities trying to say, we're going to be a landlord in the right-of-way. And we can do 150-foot pole. We don't agree with that. And this bill tries to keep those limits in place.
Representative McQuaid?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was actually hoping that Mr. Albright could answer that same question, and then I also want to know how big micro wireless
so
is as well.
The issue to the cities isn't the antenna. It's the support structure, which is permitted in this, and the support structure can be up to 50 feet. You can replace an existing light pole with a new support structure in a residential area in the right-of-way if the right-of-way is not zoned residential as this is written. So the answer to your question is yes, a 50-foot structure. Again, as you mentioned, we're working towards better-looking structures, things that are more accommodating. So those are the details that we want to still work together. And I think to the earlier analogy of a marriage, we are going to get there. This is not something that we don't want in Minnesota and that we don't want. We just have to make sure that when we say yes, we've got a good, sound ordinance in place and statute in place governing it fairly and to make sure it doesn't impact your constituents. And that's who I'm serving also.
Representative McQuaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the other two questions I have, and I'll just get them out. So I want to know how big micro wireless that could be suspended on cables, how big those are. And then I also want to know why the differentiation between who can use a third party and who can't. And also the permit process for maintenance. It's basically just those things that were brought up by the cities and the metro didn't seem like they were so far apart from what the wireless carriers wanted. So I wanted to know why those happened to be outside of cost, how that happened to be the sticking points, because it doesn't sound very unreasonable to me.
Mr. Chai, can answer a couple of those. I think another one would probably be more appropriately answered by the cable and the micro wireless. But with respect to with respect to the management costs, I thought we were there with the League of Cities. Our common goal was to really address kind of my editorial comment, the bad actors that are trying to profit from this process, and they've represented a couple cities in this state, and we have the direct contracts. They're trying to, the more they get from us as the carriers, the more compensation they get. So I thought we are not looking to exclude any city's ability to get outside engineering assistance or surveying assistance, any of those things. This is the first I've heard anything about some road safety test or anything like that in any of our negotiations, or was ever even brought up in the bill discussion.
As written, the bill does not require a permit to do maintenance, and the city works with all providers on maintenance permits when it requires closure of a roadway or types of facilities. That is the way this is written in this legislation. Previously, the previous versions didn't hit on that. It hit on some other reasonable permits and different methods. And so we're trying to bring up the issues. Again, these are issues that can be resolved at the table, and I don't think that they're opposed to agreeing to that type of language. They obviously aren't going to shut roads down typically without working through it with a city. But as written again, that doesn't provide the city with any comfort that that will happen with all providers.
Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Getting back to the price and how we came to that, I guess it would just be interesting to find out what was the initial request by the cities in the negotiations.
Mr. Chair, I can answer that.
Well, we'll let the cities answer that, Representative Whitehill.
Please restate your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Laura Ziegler with the League of Minnesota Cities. Trying to think what round we were on here. We have several members that believe this should just be at fair market value. You're not going to have the same value of these facilities in War Road as you are in Minneapolis, so there should be some difference there. And then when we were talking most recently about what we would term like a lease rate, an annual rate, I said, well, we basically have to ensure that anyone is covered, you know, how they're negotiating them now. And then we had the final offer last week.
Rep. Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What was your original request for the number to be in the bill? This is the first one you came out with.
We did not want a number in the, Mr. Chair, Representative, we did not want a number in the bill originally. That was very clear. We don't set that for any other utilities. You know, there are different rules for regulated utilities, but we did not come up with a number originally because we didn't want one fixed in there because it's going to be different, we believe, based on the market. With that said, we came back with that $200 plus actual cost last week.
Representative Burke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So last week was $200. You asked for a number previous to that. What was that number?
Ms. Ziegler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rarick, we did not state a number prior to that. That was our number offer.
Representative Rarick.
No further questions.
Yep, Representative Mahoney and Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be clear, maintenance permitting really does need to get back into the bill. You closed the road in front of my house here in Maryland, and your working stiffs will probably get run over on short notice anyhow. I sat through two of these meetings, and they were very pleasant, sarcastically said. And so I got a little understanding here. Now, there's apparently two types of technology that will be deployed. Mr. Moon, do you know what the typical or what your estimated costs are on those two different types of technologies they would be under this bill?
Mr. Ward.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, I don't know that. I know kind of what we spent on a CapEx in Minnesota, but that's, you know, I don't have an exact breakout on that.
Mr. Chair, I was led to believe that one type underneath this bill, with the 125 plus the 25 plus electrical costs, One would be approximately 1,250, and the other would be 2,400 to 2,500 per year. As you'd have the one-time rent and maintenance and then the electrical costs. Does that seem within the realm, or do you have any knowledge of that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's I think you're referring to the rent, the maintenance fee, and then breaking out the electrical on that. That's how we would understand that as well. And I think we, you know, we're kind of probably paying at the high end from electrical perspective as well. And I think we even told the league that, you know, a couple years down the road, kilowatt hours, if it goes over that, we'll pay it. You know, we're not opposed to that.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, were my numbers close to being correct or correct?
Mr. Wirtz.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think you're right. I mean, I don't have a calculator. Right. I'm a history graduate, so there goes the math and science. But I think it was based on kilowatt hours, and it was around $700-$800 for the micro cell or pico cell, and then the other one was like $1,000+ and change, yes.
Mahoney.
So, Mr. Chair, so I know the cost of some of the other cities that have negotiated are $600-$800 that you've already negotiated with, so they would actually come out better underneath this, and they might not want to be grandfathered in. So I just wanted to get that out. The other piece that I would like to both sides to tell me about is what would be the effect of an FCC ruling that declared small cell wireless a, I can't remember how the phrase goes, but allow them to be in the right-of-way as a without any messing around.
Mr. Wirtz.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, there is an active docket at the FCC. It's what they call a notice of proposed rulemaking. I believe that there could be an order if you read Chairman Ajit Pai's blogs about how eager he is to try to, I don't want to speak for the FCC, but he's very interested in driving technology, getting broadband out there cheaper, faster, better, more efficient, kind of reducing regulatory hurdles. And I think we could see something that is an FCC pole attachment rate, which is anywhere from, you know, $17 to $28 a pole. And then they just come in and the locals are preempted. I mean, it's a federal preemption. That is one of our arguments for why this bill is necessary. Let's get an elegant solution for Minnesota here, and we don't have to address that issue from the FCC.
Mr. Chair, could I ask for the cities or the league or those representing them to come down and answer my question about the FCC and what the effect might be?
Ms. Ziegler, is to restate the question, the issue of federal preemption at the FCC.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Laura Ziegler with the League. In brevity, I will agree with Mr. Wirtz. I think what he said is absolutely true. There's an open docket. We'll be filing comments along the similar lines when we have filed FCC comments when there was a similar docket a couple months ago. That we certainly welcome the technology, but it shouldn't come at the expense of local control and authority making. And we'll submit those and see where the FCC takes us.
Representative Mahoney.
I think I drew my conclusions. Thank you.
Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, trying to understand how this works, one of the things that was said to me is that in a city, for example, like Minneapolis, where I live and represent, probably we could expect in order to have meet the demand in a residential area, there would be a tower on the end of each block. Is that right? Is that the correct way to understand the kind of distance and penetration we're talking about here?
Mr. Wirtz.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, these are not towers. These are antennas that might go on.
Antennas, excuse me.
Sure. In areas of high densification, we could see, you know, anywhere from 500 to 1,000 feet the need for those antennas. The days of the big cell towers, those are largely built out. We might see those, you know, here and there. But this is about going from the cell tower to these small antennas to bring that coverage. We're not just making phone calls anymore. We're using tremendous amounts of data. For AT&T, it was 250,000% increase over the last 10 years. People are using these things, these devices, apps, it's also going into smart city applications, telemedicine. So, yeah, that's why we're going to see the need for these the deployment of these antennas closer to the ground, closer to where people already are, to enhance the coverage.
Representative Clark, a follow-up?
One of the questions I think about in neighborhoods like mine, where we have a lot of issues going on, is this maintenance issue. I mean, we do have situations where utilities are being damaged. I'm not sure how secure these facilities are. These aerial. How difficult is it to damage one of these aerials?
Mr. Wertz.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I really can't speak to how difficult. I mean, we're not going to put several hundred thousand dollar piece of equipment on something that is structurally not going to sustain it. That's first and foremost. I can't speak for somebody who might, you know, hit this thing with a car or something like that. But the maintenance fee is part of this pricing calculation. There is no other maintenance fee of this type in any other bill that's been enacted or that has been introduced. It's $25 per pole per year for that portion of the pole where we would reside to afford the city that recovery.
Representative Lehman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question is for Ms. Ziegler as well. And they probably have a couple of questions. I want to vote for this, but I asked my cities for their comments. I didn't give them a lot of time because we just knew about this hearing yesterday. So I asked them to respond, and one of the cities I work closely with is Deer River, Minnesota. And they responded and said they polled their city council, and they were opposed and wanted me to vote in opposition to this. Asked them the reason, and they said it was pure and simply the loss of control over their right-of-ways. They didn't want to see the state mandating control over their right-of-ways. So I guess my question sort of comes off to Representative Mahoney is, are we giving them a better deal now? Will the FCC be coming along and requiring the use of the right-of-ways? And how has that played into your conversations at all with your membership?
Ms. Ziegler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lehman, that's a really good question. Because we don't know what the FCC is going to do, and I think there are some core principles that, of course, local elected officials hold in their communities, and this managing the right-of-way is one of them. And so we will certainly, to that effect, be submitting comments and advocate for that position, as well a lot of our parent organization, the National League of Cities. There's a lot of conversation around that. I'm not the person that drafts those comments. I don't know. I really don't know what the FCC, if any, will preempt, and also what they decide to preempt, if that will hold in certain circumstances, having to do with a federal agency coming down on, you know, a local municipality and what they can control. So I think there's a couple different issues there on if what they decide to do and what holds.
Is there a Lehman, a follow-up?
Just a quick follow-up. I am concerned when I envision these poles in front of residents, but I didn't hear you speaking to that. Has that come up in your discussion with your membership?
Ms. Ziegler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lehman, yes, that has come up. I wanted to leave. I knew Mr. Albrecht was going to touch on that with his expertise in public works, and so that was one of the reasons I did not touch on it. Because the matter of the fact is, when more poles go up, as more and more providers would like to deploy their technology, and there's no room on existing structures, there are going to have to be new poles put up in consultation with the local unit of government. And so we're just going to have to be thoughtful in how those are put in, because as many of us know, lots of phone calls to city councils when that happens, and there are concerns to property values and such when those are erected. So that's definitely a consideration so that these cities negotiate.
Thank you. To all our testifiers and members, thanks for the conversation and the questions. It's greatly appreciated. So with that, Representative Thiessen, do you have a follow-up question or can we move on to amendments?
I did have a question.
Representative Thiessen.
So on this preemption issue, I guess I don't get it. If the FCC acts, are they going to act to, if a state is act, then the state's law is going to, if we do this, it's going to prevail, or if the FCC acts, this is all or not?
Mr. Wirtz.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, I think the order, well, first of all, I would not preclude to say what they're going to do, nor would I make it do a preemption on just certain on deployment, on price. There could be a number of avenues they could go. I mean, it is an active docket. Ms. Ziegler's correct. They filed comments. The wireless carriers have filed comments. All I know is kind of what I read, and it is an active docket right now, and there appears to be some consensus to try to drive deployment.
Representative Thiessen?
Thank you. So what is the active docket saying right now? I mean, they put something out that says kind of this is what we're thinking about doing.
Correct.
And then it take comments. So what is it, this is what we're thinking about doing? Would it preempt this stuff?
Mr. Schwartz.
Representative, I don't have the docket in front of me. I just kind of it's about the chairman of G5 has said he wants to try to accelerate the deployment of this technology, broadband, but they don't necessarily drive you to, here's what our solutions are. It's not being addressed in terms of price or regulatory relief or anything of that nature. I think it's more big picture, and the comments are being followed on that.
Representative Thiessen, the open docket is focused on the issue of what's called desensification. So it's the concept that we're going to be having, or there's more density because of the new services that are available. Where the docket can go with that, there's broad discretion on. That's what I know about it, and that's literally the limit of my knowledge on the open docket. Whether it would, my understanding is that from the trade journals is that the likelihood of preemption is going to be where there's an absence of policies, not superseding state policies. However, I mean, it's the FCC, who knows.
Well, then that was the question I was asking. So that is helpful. Thank you. I did have another question.
Absolutely. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you. So this bill is about small cell wireless. It's not about 5G or any particular technology. Would that be an accurate assessment?
Mr. Wirtz.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thiessen, that's correct. The small cell technology is kind of a linchpin to get to 5G. I mean, we're not even offering 5G yet. When we first started this process, the standards weren't even established. That was 6 months ago. We've already kind of developed those international standards. The technology partners are coming online. We, Verizon, other carriers have already announced our plans to begin deployment of this. In our case, the 2018, we're actively testing this. My colleague, Mr. McDermott, said they're testing this in 11 cities right now. But the small cells are really going to help. It's a spectrum congestion issue. And small cells help alleviate that, and we can then, run the 5G over that, which is much higher speed because of our spectrum holdings.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Thiessen.
So, and there has been small cell technology deployed in the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Wirtz.
It's my understanding we are actively pursuing small cell applications right now. That is correct. We are in front of the city of Minneapolis right now. Part of the Super Bowl, we are in St. Louis Park, and we're still trying to discuss things in St. Paul.
Representative
Thiessen. Thank you. So, and the ordinance that Minneapolis has adopted is for small cell technology.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's correct.
Okay. Members, thanks again for the questions and the conversation. It's appreciated. Thank you for our public testifiers. We'll now move on to amendments. Is there an amendment a member wishes to offer? Representative Thiessen.
Thank you. I would like to offer the A7.
Representative Thiessen moves the A7 amendment. Representative Thiessen to your amendment.
And I'd like to do an oral amendment if I could.
Of course.
Delete line 1.3 and 1.4. And then on line 1.6, delete the two in parentheses and insert before any, so right at the beginning, subdivisions 3A, 3B, 3C,
comma, 6, and 7, parentheses, E.
Okay, if you could just, nonpartisan staff will restate this, but strike line 1.3, line 1.4. On line 1.6, strike the number 2, and then there was an insertion of language there that, Mr. Eloff, did you get it already, or would you like Representative Thiessen to restate it?
Mr. Chair, I prefer that Representative Thiessen restate it.
It's subdivisions. It's 3A, 3B, 3C, 6, and 7E.
Mr. Eloff, give me the thumbs up when you're good with that.
My problem is with 7E, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure there is a subdivision 7E.
Representative Thiessen.
It's on page 1451.
Okay, subdivision 7, paragraph E.
All right, so Representative Thiessen, if nonpartisan staff has it, Representative Thiessen will incorporate those changes into the A7 amendment. Representative Thiessen, to your amendment.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So this... this amendment deals kind of with what we were just talking about a little bit. The city of Minneapolis has already enacted a small cell ordinance. There's already an exemption in the bill for agreements that have been reached with cities, lease agreements and other things. What this amendment would do would be to allow, and Minneapolis kind of acted through a different mechanism in a sense where they adopted an ordinance under which they are operating. And so what this subdivision would basically bring would bring some parity to cities that have proceeded under agreements and would allow the City of Minneapolis ordinance that is already enacted to apply in the City of Minneapolis as opposed to this law.
Representative O'Neill. Well, Representative O'Neill, Representative Thiessen, so the language sounds certainly reasonable. I'm going to recommend members of the committee vote no on this amendment for now, but I think this is something that we can definitely take action on and correct in the future, whether it be on the floor or in conference committee at certain situations. But I think right now at this time it's probably best if members vote no, but this conversation will continue.
Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Neill.
I'm sorry. When you called on me, I wasn't sure what you were asking, so... Thank you. It's been a long day. Back to the marriage therapy. Just because we've had arduous stakeholder meetings, and I would ask that we would vote no on this amendment because I think, out of deference for all of the stakeholders, I think we would like an opportunity to review the language and understand exactly what it does.
Representative Thiessen.
And just to clarify, I think the intention from the beginning was to accomplish this because that language about... language on page 8, line 12, any existing agreement between a local government unit and an entity about the placement of small wireless facilities is not affected. So there's already this carve-out for these agreements that have already been enacted, and I just think in some sense it's an oversight that it only uses the word agreement as opposed to use the word agreement and ordinance. So I actually think it's conforming to the original intent of the legislation.
Representative Thiessen, I'm pretty sure you're correct, but we're just not going to be able to adopt this amendment.
I understand.
Right now.
I can withdraw it for now, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Yeah. Representative Thiessen withdraws the A7 amendment. Any other amendments members wish to offer? Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A8 amendment.
Representative Mahoney moves the A8 amendment.
And the reason I would do that is that I've heard the concern by the cities about setting a fee and the cost going up, and they don't want to come back to the legislature. And I've always thought we were very nice to cities in the legislature, and I guess we haven't been as much as they think. But what I'm trying to do here is put an inflationary adjustment in every January to the rate of the all items consumer price index for all urban consumers, CPI-U, compiled by the Labor Department of Labor for the previous year, but no more than 3%. Hopefully that keeps it, that means they wouldn't have to come back and ask us to readjust the fee, because although we do it every year for multiple things, my pipe fitter license has gone up, down, surcharged, up, and now back down. So we do it pretty regularly over the time. So, Mr. Chair, that's the amendment, and I would hope that we could put this on.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Mahoney. I would also ask that we would not adopt this, just out of deference for the very difficult stakeholder process, but let's process this sort of talk about a little bit, if I had had a little bit in advance. This is the concept that we have talked about, and I'm not opposed to necessarily, but if we could just hold off on it for right now and maybe offer it on the floor.
Mr. Chair, I think I can certainly withdraw this. I just want all bodies to understand that we're all participants in the negotiation, that this is an issue, and it is an issue that that probably needs to be addressed before this gets to the governor's desk for signature.
Thank you, Representative.
So I'll withdraw my amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Any additional amendments members wish to offer? Representative Metz, do you have an amendment?
Just a quick clarification question that I was going to ask to the A7 before it gets to the floor.
Yes?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. As this moves forward, could we get a list to Representative O'Neill of other cities that might have small cell agreements in the state that could be applied in Representative Thiessen's amendment?
So certainly I think the providers would be aware of this, or cities, yeah. The League of Minnesota Cities, it can give you an opportunity for those groups to get back together in the same room again and share information. So you can do that.
Mr. Chair, I'm all for good marriage.
Yeah, so it would be helpful if members of the committee are requesting that. If you wish, please, the stakeholders, you can share that information with the committee legislative assistant or committee administrator. We'll make sure to share it not only with members of the committee but also with the entire members of the body. Is there any other amendments members wish to offer? Seeing none, we'll close the closing comments, questions and comments, or comments from members of the committee. Seeing none, Representative O'Neill, you get the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I just want to thank you for taking this time today to hear this, and although we haven't come to a complete agreement, and I've actually heard some brand new things I have never heard before, that we'll take those into consideration as well. We have come a long way, and we've come to a lot of agreement, and there are very small points, I think, that are in disagreement, and just to kind of point that out, I think Representative Eric had asked what was the number that was thrown out in negotiations, and just to show you how far we have come, when I asked the league if they could accept 150, which was the offer on the table, they said no. I said 200. They said no. I offered 300. They said no. And then I said, what could you accept? And she said 2,500 for the rate. So we've gone from 2,500 down to an offer of 200 and then what you see in the bill now. So we have come a long way. We've come to an agreement on the vast majority of the points. And like I said, there are a couple of new points that we'll take into negotiation again, and we'll move this forward. Thank you for your time today.
And on behalf of the rest of the committee and the public, Representative O'Neill, thank you very much for the past work you've given on this and also the work that still remains for the remainder of the session. So with that, Representative O'Neill renews her motion to have House File 739 as amended, recommended to pass and refer to the General Register. All those in favor, please signify. Let me go into the General Register. Or
yes.
General Register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay.
No.
Motion prevails, and you're on your way. Motion prevails. Representative O'Neill, thank you very much. Members of the committee, I do not anticipate we'll be meeting again the rest of the session, but you never know. So with that, we're adjourned.